Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, of the making of books, there is no end. How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. But with me in the studio is my perfect producer, Mr. Dan Arnfeld. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hello.
It's good to have Dan. We're going to get him to read books eventually. So I do have a comment today again. And this is from my friend in Australia. I think it's Australia. It's either Australia or New Zealand. But it's from Mr. Fraser Murray. And what he wrote is, now he's really listening in to our podcast on Winston Churchill. And it's not going to end for a while, so we'll probably be hearing more from him. But he says, Dear Mr. Leap, my son is off school sick today. But it hasn't stopped him from resting on the couch and enjoying his Churchill DVD documentary again. So that warms my heart that you have a high school age son and he's not well, he's at home, but he's watching a Churchill DVD documentary. So again, here he says Fraser Murray from Tasmania, Australia. So I wasn't too far off. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Fraser, for doing that. And thank you to your son for also doing that. And I really do think, parents, that a lot of you, even as you're listening to these programs on Winston Churchill, that you encourage your, especially your older, some of your older, you know, eighth graders maybe, high school students, that they also read along with these books. And it's really exciting because a lot of what Churchill accomplished, he accomplished in his very young years, to be honest. And so there's always room for us to learn how to, well, challenge things the way he did. So for today's program, what I want to do is I want to begin discussing Candace Millard's book titled Hero of the Empire. Now, Miss Millard is a best-selling author whose books frequently appear on the New York Times bestseller list. And so she's quite the historian. And I noticed that when opening this book, first of all, I couldn't find it for a while in my home. We've done some remodeling. We've moved things all over the place, and not everything is back where it should be anyway. But I found out that I actually bought this book in 2019 in South Carolina. And so I do have a favorite bookstore right there in South Carolina that I like to go to when I'm there. And so I've had this book for quite a while. And then just recently, when we opened up the exhibit here, one of my best listeners, and nice person met me at the exhibit. We were talking, and she says, I just love the podcast. She says, I just want you to know that I finished that book, and I went to the second book already. And she says, and that book really is a compliment to the first book. And she said, have you read it yet? And I said, no, I haven't read it yet. She said, well, you need to be reading that book. And so hopefully she's listening in today, and I know she will be. But so she said that this book really does make the other book even more exciting. And she said it really does add a lot of history to what we've been talking about. So I really do want to get into this book. Now, I just like to mention, I've looked at some of her other books as well. And two of her well-known books are, one is called River of Doubt, and that's about Theodore Roosevelt's darkest journey into the wilderness of Brazil. And he lost an election, and to appease himself, he went on this journey through Brazil, and he got into this wilderness area, and he was on this river, but it was a river of doubt. And I think what she means there is a doubt about himself and his accomplishments. Then she has another one called Destiny of the Republic, and this is an extraordinary account of James Garfield's rise from poverty to the American presidency and the dramatic history of his assassination. And so here's one of our presidents that really grew up, came out of poverty, became president, and then everyone hated him and assassinated him. So anyway, I'm really interested in reading that book, both of those books. So we'll have to see how much reading I can do. Now, one of the things about the subhead of this book, I think it is a clear explanation of what this book is about. So again, it is a national bestseller. It is written by Candace Millard, and is titled Hero of the Empire. And then right below that, on the front of the book, is The Boer War, A Daring Escape, and The Making of Winston Churchill. So I think you'll find that this is a great complement to what we have been reading. And in some ways, she fills in details that Winston Churchill does not put in there. And it really adds a lot to it. And I'm finding myself just really excited to be reading it. Now, one of the things I wanted to just go ahead and read here for you is in the very beginning, the very frontispiece of the book, and being a library student, I do have a master's degree in library and information science, and you had to learn all the parts of a book. And the frontispiece is the very front of the book, where they usually talk a little bit about the book. And here's a quote that she put in the front of the book by Piers Brendan. Now, I don't know Piers Brendan, but he is the former keeper of the Archive Center at Churchill College in Cambridge. And so you know, I've been to Oxford. I can't remember if I've been to Cambridge or not. But there is a Churchill College, and that's just one of the sections of Cambridge. And so this is what he has to say about this book. He said, combining vivid narrative and original scholarship, Candace Millard reveals how Winston Churchill laid the foundations of his political career during the Boer War. Supremely courageous, flagrantly ambitious, and incredibly lucky, young Winston emerges as the authentic hero of this thrilling tale of imperial derring do. And so this man has a lot of knowledge about Winston Churchill, and he really praises this woman about this book. And so today what I want to do is I want to begin our reading of the book with Miss Millard's prologue. And this is just very much very, very page one. And if I can, and if as we get into this, the book, I'm really very interested in inviting her to come on and let me interview her on the radio. And so I have done this before. And so I did it with a couple other books, one on China, and then I did another one with Melville's, the author of one of the Melville. He wrote a biography of Herman Melville, and that was really a lot of fun. So anyway, I'm going to start with the prologue, and the thing that's interesting about this prologue is one of my favorite kind of movies are spy movies. You know, I love James Bond. I love all that. And reading this prologue, it's like she's a filmmaker, and she really wraps you in on what's really happening. And so hopefully, as you're reading this out, you know, by yourselves, hopefully you get the same feeling. Now, also in regards to my early life, one of the things you also need to do is finish reading the end of that book. Because it's going to talk about the Boer War as well. But like I said, her take on it is so much different. So this is how her prologue opens. It says, crouching in darkness outside the prison fence in wartime southern Africa, Winston Churchill could still hear the voices of the guards on the other side. Seizing his chance an hour earlier, the 25-year-old had scaled the high corrugated iron paling. Now, essentially, the word paling there is a fence. And this fence is made from pointed iron stakes. And he climbed the whole fence, got over the stakes, didn't get injured, and he jumped to the ground. And but he got out of the prison yard by climbing over that fence. But she goes on to say, but now he was trapped in a new dilemma. He could not remain where he was. At any moment, he could be discovered and shot by the guards or by the soldiers who patrolled the dark surrounding streets of Pretoria, the capital of the enemy Boer Republic. And so are we surprised? Are we surprised that Winston Churchill would get him in such a fix? And no, we're not. But it is, like I said, it's really exciting. I could just see it, you know, the darkness. I could see him climbing the fence and jumping the fence, and now he's hiding. She goes on to say, yet neither could he run. His hopes for survival depended on two other prisoners who were still inside the wall. In the long minutes since he had dropped down into the darkness, they had not appeared. And so this to me makes a little bit suspicious of what's going on. And she goes on to say, from the moment he had been taken as a prisoner of war, Churchill had dreamed of reclaiming his freedom, hatching scheme after scheme, each more elaborate than the last. In the end, however, the plan that had actually brought him over the fence was not his own. The two other English prisoners had plotted the escape and agreed with only great reluctance to bring him along. And so that's, why did he jump over by himself and they didn't do that? You know, what's really going on here? Now, she goes on to say, they also carried the provisions that were supposed to sustain all three of them as they tried to cross nearly 300 miles of enemy territory. So you can see that this, now Winston's 25 years old, so he's not an old guy, he's a young guy. We know what happened to him with the Malacan force. We know what he saw there. And, you know, he's not afraid of things. And so this reminds me, very early in the book, my early years, is when he and his brother were out running around. He climbs this pine tree, and then he falls out, gets a concussion. I mean, this guy, he did all kinds of things. You know, he's lucky he survived to 20, let alone 25. So again, these two prisoners, they were plotting to escape, but they didn't necessarily want to bring him along. Now, here's the other problem. They also carried the provisions that were supposed to sustain all three of them as they tried to cross the nearly 300 miles of enemy territory. So who had the food? The two guys in the fence, inside the fence. And she goes on to say, unable even to climb back into his hated captivity, Churchill found himself alone, hiding in the low ragged shrubs that lined the fence with no idea what to do next. And so can you imagine? It's, I grew up with three brothers, and I learned after a certain while, don't trust them no matter what they say. Oh, you'll be fine. Yeah, right. As they trip me down the stairs or something. So anyway, remember now, Churchill is a famous young man. He's got a father that was very famous in England. And if they're two English guys with him, they could be a little jealous of who they're dealing with. Now, she goes on, this is on page 2 of the prologue, she says, although he was still a very young man, Churchill was no stranger to situations of great personal peril. He had already taken part in 4 wars on 3 different continents and had come close to death in each one. And so a lot of these we have covered. It says he felt bullets whistling by his head in Cuba. That's that part of Churchill's book that we just got finished, that's in the very early part of the book, so you may have forgotten about his experience in Cuba. The most important thing he learned in Cuba was how to smoke a cigar. He had that habit the rest of his life, by the way. He had to have Cubanos if he was going to smoke a cigar. It had to be from Cuba. She saw his friends. He saw his friends hacked to death in British India, being separated from his regiment in the desert of the Sudan. And just a month earlier, in November 1899, at the start of the Boer War, led the resistance against a devastating attack on an armored train. And so she brings back a little bit of things from India and, of course, the Pashtuns. And you remember they had their swords, and they would not only kill someone, they would totally mutilate their bodies with their swords and all that. So he got to see all of that. Now, we haven't talked much about the Sudan. We talked a little bit about it. And remember, he had to fight to even get into Sudan. And then once he got in there, he did it. He was one of the great soldiers there. And, the Sudan is still a problem today in Africa. And so he said, and just a month earlier in 1899, at the start of the Boer War, led the resistance against a devastating attack on the armored train. Several men had died in that attack, blown to pieces by shells and deafening barrage of bullets. Many more had been horribly wounded, and Churchill had barely escaped with his life. To his fury and deep frustrations, however, he had not eluded capture. He, along with dozens of British officers and soldiers, had been taken prisoner by the Boers, the Tuff, largely Dutch-speaking settlers who had been living in southern Africa for centuries and were not about to let the British Empire take their land without a fight. Now, the British did feel that they had a right to take South Africa. And, they, again, it's not that they wanted to just be, well, maybe I better be careful here. There was a lot of gold and silver in South Africa, and so I'm sure that probably the empire needed wealth as well. And so the English Empire was very helpful to all the nations that they, brought into the empire. But they also helped themselves to the goodies as well. It says, when the Boers had realized they had captured the son of Lord Randolph Churchill, a former Chancellor of the Exchequer, and that's a money man. That's a man that's controlling the money, and a member of the highest ranks of the British aristocracy, they had been thrilled. Churchill had been quickly transported to a POW camp in Pretoria, the Boer capital, where he'd been imprisoned. With about 100 other men, since that day, he had been able to think of nothing but escape and returning to the war. Notice that. That sounds like Churchill, doesn't it? He wasn't trying to escape back to England. He wanted to escape to go back to the war. He wanted to be out there fighting. He said, but the Boer War turned out to be far more difficult and more devastating than the amusing colonial war the British had expected. Their army, one of the most admired and feared fighting forces in the world, was astonished to find itself struggling to hold its own against a little-known republic on a continent that most Europeans considered to be theirs for the taking. Already the British had learned more from this war than almost any other. Slowly, they were realizing that they had entered a new age of warfare. The days of gallant young soldiers wearing bright red coats had suddenly disappeared, leaving the vaunted British army to face an invisible enemy with weapons so powerful they could wreak carnage without ever getting close enough to look their victims in the eye. So this is a lot different than India. And India was considered the jewel of the empire. And of course, having South Africa as well would add just another jewel to the empire. She goes on to say, now, long before it was over, the war would also change the empire in another equally indelible way. It would bring to the attention of a rapt British public a young man named Winston Churchill. So I think this is, it's amazing what she's writing. And in some ways, he's going to explain this a little bit more. But we all know Winston Churchill. We all know that he not only wanted to fight a war, he wanted to be seen fighting a war. And he wanted attention. And he did want medals. And he wanted to move forward. We also know that he actually, you know, right before we're getting to this part, he wanted to quit the army and go into politics. And essentially what she says here is he hoped to use the Boer War to get into politics. That's what he was really hoping for. So I'm just going to continue to read this. It said, it would bring to the attention of a rapt British public a young man named Winston Churchill. Although he had tried again and again in war after war to win glory, Churchill had returned home every time without the medals that mattered, no more distinguished or famous than he had been when he set out. The Boer War, he believed, was his best chance to change that, to prove that he was not just the son of a famous man. He was special, even extraordinary. He was also meant not just to fight for his country, but one day lead it. Although he believed this without question, he still had to convince everyone else, something he would never be able to do from a POW camp in Pretoria. So Churchill wanted out of prison so he could, well, make his mark. And as we get into the next couple chapters, you're going to see, some of the other. She includes a few things we've already heard about him, and the fact that we'll get into this probably in a minute or two. It says, when Churchill had scrambled over the prison fence, seizing his chance after a nearby guard had turned his back, he felt elated. Now, as he kneeled in the shrubs just outside, waiting helplessly for the other men, his desperation mounted with each passing minute. Finally, he heard a British voice. Churchill realized with a surge of relief that it was one of his co-conspirators. "It's all up," the man whispered. The guard was suspicious, watching their every move. They could not get out. And they asked, "Can you get back in?" The other prisoner asked, "Now, that's not nice. Can you get back in?" You can imagine climbing that fence with all the stakes at the top of it. But she goes on, and this is, she's really got some insight here. She said, both men knew the answer. You know, they were playing with him. They had all the chocolate. They had all the provisions. He said, as they stood on opposite sides of the fence, one still in captivity, the other achingly close to freedom, it was painfully apparent that Churchill could not undo what had already been done. He couldn't go back. There's no way he could get back. It would have been impossible for him to climb back into the prison enclosure without being caught, and the punishment for his escape would have been immediately and possibly fatal. And so in other words, they would have shot him on the mark. And besides, you know, he was famous. And they thought, they're going to get glory. Hey, I killed a famous a famous Brit whose dad counted all the money. She goes on to say, and all the time he had spent thinking about his escape since arriving in Pretoria, the one scenario that Churchill had not envisioned was crossing enemy territory alone without companions or provisions of any kind. He didn't have a weapon, a map, a compass, or, aside from a few bars of chocolate in his pocket, any food. He didn't speak the language, either that of the Boers or of the Afrikaans. Beyond the vaguest of outlines, he didn't even have a plan, just the unshakable conviction that he was destined for greatness. And Winston, he really did believe in his star. He believed he was going to lead England. So now let's get into part one. And this is kind of the meat of the book starting. And I think the title of it is interesting. So this is not chapter one, this is part one. There's part two, part three, part four. And so, but part one, she titled Pushful the Younger. And if you remember, well, I'll get into this in just a minute. But if you remember, that's what the leading upper crust in England would call him, Pushful the Younger, the metal, you know, the metal keeper. The chapter one now of this, of part one, is titled Death by Inches. And but she does bring out some really good things here. And again, like I said to you just a few minutes ago, it's really a great compliment to my early life. And to me, it's expanding my understanding of Winston Churchill and what he really did accomplish. He says, from earliest childhood, Churchill had been fascinated by war and dreamed of gallantry in battle. There is no ambition I cherish so keenly, he had confided to his younger brother Jack, as to gain a reputation for personal courage. As a boy, he had collected a miniature army of 1,500 toy soldiers and spent hours sending them into battle. From a very early youth, I had brooded about soldiers in war, and often I had imagined in dreams and daydreams the sensations attendant upon being for the first time under fire, he wrote. It seemed to my youthful mind that it must be a thrilling and immense experience to hear the whistle of bullets all around and to play at hazard from moment to moment with death and wounds. At Sandhurst, and again, that's in my early life, said at Sandhurst, the Royal Military College from which he had graduated in 1894, Churchill had loved nothing more than to participate in war games, regretting only that it all had to be make-believe. And so he liked the war games, but he didn't like his make-believe. He wanted to really be in war. And of course, as we've covered over the last year or so, he realized that war can be really painful. Well, sorry, but that's all the time I have for today's program. Now, on our next program, we'll continue to discuss Candace Millard's book, Hero of the Empire. We'll continue the prologue, and then we'll move even further into part one, titled Pushful the Younger. This book covers the detail of the Boer War and Churchill's rise to great leadership. It's a wonderful supplement to Winston Churchill's book, My Early Life, and continues the history of Winston's success in politics. Now, you can buy Candace Millard's book at Amazon.com. You may be able to find a good used and less expensive copy at abebooks.com. You also may be able to find a copy in your local bookstore, and of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.